Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Now Spinning. So good to have you with us again. With me today in the room I have...
Andy.
Jacob.
And, doesn't matter. Simon, I think. Anyway... Today, we're going to be sort of continuing a conversation that we had at our last meeting, which was about what is a perfect song, and then later, what is a perfect album. We thought this was an interesting thought experiment, and I thought it was good enough that we could do a whole episode about this.
We were talking about like a perfect album, not the best album, not greatest all time, anything. It's just perfect, and we can talk a little bit about like what makes it perfect to us, and then we'll talk about some perfect albums. So what are we thinking?
So I think you mentioned that a perfect album is like how many songs you have you wouldn't change.
Right.
For me, that's it. My thing is like the best album that I would listen continuously for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
What's some albums you think would represent that though is my question.
Well, for me, Thriller. There's still a reason why it's the number one best-selling album of all time. The only song on there that Jacob mentioned did not age well was the Paul McCartney duet.
I was going to mention that.
You don't like that song?
The girl is mine. They fight about a girl. Like, that's okay. That's weird.
It is. It's pretty
All the
weird,
other songs are bangers. Like, his most iconic songs are on this album.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I mean, and you say that, like, good. Off the Wall and stuff is a really good album, too. But you're right. Like, the bangers are on this one. This is,
Appetite for Destruction, again, Guns N' Roses, all of their best songs, except for, like, maybe two, are on this album. If you want hard rock, something to head to bang to.
And this is, to me... Appetite for Destruction as an album is, like you said, there are other famous songs that came later in their career, but it wasn't quite the same hard rock sound. They were doing some different things, and that's totally valid, but like this album, beginning to end, is pretty good.
Yes, that's saying something because they only have like three albums. Yes, gotta love
it. You don't like Chinese Democracy?
The spaghetti incident.
Oh, I hate that album.
Then the next one is The Wall, just basically because of the concept. Most albums are just basically a collection of just random songs that they wrote. The Wall is actually telling a story, which I think is absolutely cool.
It's a movie.
And it's a movie.
I've never seen the movie, but it's on the list. Don't worry, it's on the list. Anyway.
Yeah, I like The Wall a lot. That's one for me. I don't listen to a lot of Pink Floyd, but that's one for me where, as an entire experience, it is all there, and you can really, like, just lose your mind listening to it a little bit, you know what I mean? But it's, as a cohesive album, is very good. And a long one, two discs, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Serious business.
Also, I realized when I listened to it is that the last song, when it ends, it goes directly into the first song again. So it's
really?
Literally... No, yeah, the ending of it fades out and it fades in to the first song again. So like if you just had it on repeat, it would just go on forever and ever. And I think that not a lot of albums do that. There's a couple of King Gizzard albums, put on the bingo, that do that, actually.
I've never listened to The Wall repeat on.
Billy Joel's The Stranger starts with, you know, that whistle tune at the start and at the beginning.
I didn't know that. I like that album a lot. I never thought about that. We're learning new things today. That's the great... That's the wonderful thing.
That's the point of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, King Giz, Billy Joel, Pink Floyd. They albums that loop. Fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I've never thought about that before.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Personally, though, for me, when I think about what makes an album perfect, what is the album trying to do? And, like, did they succeed in doing, like, setting out the vibe they wanted to create?
Actually, if I can go back to Andy's real quick. The Wall is one, too, where it feels like they accomplished what they set out to do.
Yeah.
I don't really know what they set out to do.
Man trapped by insanity, I guess?
I guess?
I mean, Pink Floyd are heavy in the narcotics, and it really shows in this album.
Man.
But you
it
know
basically
what?
Destroyed
Pink Floyd, that's what makes Pink Floyd Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely true. And I think that would be an album I would say fits the criteria. I have thoughts about The Wall, but I don't know if I can talk about The Wall for an hour or do a whole podcast about it, maybe.
We probably could.
We could, but it's a good album.
Yeah.
But for me, like I said, what's the vibe or like what's the story, like you said, the album is trying to tell, and like how does it accomplish that? So... my first thought for an album that like sets a very specific vibe and it, you know, knocks it out of the park with that would be Seychelles by Masayoshi Takanaka. This is a guy I've brought into a couple meetings. I've talked about him a little bit in the past. Japanese jazz fusion guitarist. One of my favorite jazz fusion musicians in general.
Oh, yeah.
The album Seychelles, the album cover is a picture of like a beach and there's just a seagull flying overhead.
It's the Seychelles.
The Seychelles, like the islands.
Yeah.
Yeah, the real place.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, that's a place.
Yeah.
Check it out. real island.
Yeah, right.
It's a country.
That's an expensive vacation.
Someday, I don't know. I'll to go there just so I can go to this like the random beach they took that picture on and be like, there's a bird. That's the bird from the album cover.
I love that when you get, sorry for the tangent, but I love when you see online when people like go find where album covers were taken and then they like take the picture again so you can see the like modern and like what it looked back in the day.
You're good. Okay, I'm going to continue this tangent slightly just to say be really terrible to be like a British person who lives in like the general area of Abbey Road Studios because every day you're commuting and there's just people crossing the street over and over again and you're just trying to get to work.
Just living on Penny Lane.
Oh, God, yeah. That's what I mean. Like I said, living near an album cover must be a pain.
There's that famous David Bowie album cover where he's sitting. Where he's sitting in the like door frame. I've seen a picture of it now. It doesn't look alike at all, but it's like just a completely different place now. And there's like one object that you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's right there. It's like a lamp post or something.
We're naming a lot of albums I would also consider perfect right now, but I don't want to talk about them right now.
That's cool.
But anyway, Seychelles, like I said, the album cover, it conjures like an image of like, you know, being on vacation. It's a tropical paradise, nice, cool breeze, wonderful time. Mm-hmm. The music 100% syncs up with the album cover and the general vibe of it.
Yeah.
It's very happy, free music.
And that's why you mentioned best jazz fusion album.
Yeah.
I would kind of agree with that. I like jazz fusion all right. I've literally said it in the podcast before, and I'm sorry to everybody, but like jazz fusion can get a little boring sometimes.
Occasionally.
And that's like, this is one where it never gets boring. And I feel like this, they really committed to like the vibe and the sound. And that's like, it is technically very impressive. Like the musicianship is amazing. But like, it's also, it all sounds good. And it, and there's never a moment where you're like, this is some complex time signature or this is some complex mixing of keys or something like that. Like, it all just feels fun and nice. And you know, it's not all roses, but it for the most part, just sounds really nice.
Yeah, and like,
They nailed it.
And I wouldn't even say this isn't like my very favorite jazz fusion album. I'm just saying like, just for like you said, you know, perfect album doesn't have to be your favorite album. It just has to be an album that you'd be like, I can't think of anything wrong with this or like anything that stands out to me. Like this is a part that like sticks out as being not part of the whole. But this album, like I said, all the way through, great vibes. Nothing's out of place. That's one thing I wanted to touch on. Like a lot of those jazz fusion albums, whether this is the thing like you enjoy or not, a lot of people are mixed about it, how like a lot of them, especially on like the poppier side, are like everything is very precise. Everything, there's not a lot of, you know, experimentation, but there's not like a lot of improvisation or anything like that.
Sure, yeah. And, I think there's a lot of
everything
experimentation.
Everything is very, it's like sterile, set in stone, that kind of stuff. Like I was going to say before this, I wasn't going to mention Steely Dan, but I'm going to mention Steely Dan Asia. That's an album also that I'd say like everything is very much played exactly note for note how they intended it. There's no like not a lot of improvisation. Everything is like took like 10 takes for every single instrumental track. Multiple people like came in and like left because they didn't like their playing enough. It's like scientifically distilled down to be as perfect as possible.
Wow.
And I do love that album. Like I said, that's not what makes it a perfect album to me, like literally technically perfect. But I wanted to talk about kind of the polar opposite of this, though. You know, like I said, two albums right there, like very specifically, they set a vibe and they go out to reach it by being as perfect as possible. Everything being in its right place, nothing out of place. But I wanted to talk about an album that is the polar opposite. Everything, it's like all over the place, ramshackle, very like lo-fi. And that would be Mellow Gold by Beck. This is his... not his first album, but it's his first like major label album. It's got the song Loser on it. That's the song everybody knows off it. But the whole thing, it's a fascinating document. It's almost like a mix of like hip hop almost and folk at times, which is strange. Like the opening track, obviously, Loser, everybody knows that one.
Mm-hmm. It's and like, that's hip hop, folk, alternative.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a product of its time in that way, and that a lot of that blending was happening at the time. But it's very bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
And pretty unique, really.
Yeah. Definitely, but that's not even my favorite song on the album, though. The whole thing, the album cover is like a weird statue made of trash on like a background of like just like the brown sky, like ominous, like desert vibe. And the music 100% fits the cover. The whole product is like a messed up fever dream of an album. Everything's messed up. It's all over the place. Lo-fi, random sounds coming in and out. But it's never a point where you're like, this doesn't make sense to me. This doesn't fit. You're like immersed in this like terrible world that Beck has created for you.
It's a consistent vibe.
Yeah, consistent. Yeah. And like, it's like consistent. And also what's interesting to me about it is that like kind of the songs on the album, they start out the most conventional, like Loser obviously is like the biggest song in the album. And as it goes on, it's like starts off with like sort of normal folk music. And as it goes on, it just gets more and more like disturbing. Until like the end, it's like a song that's called like Black Hole, and it's like a drone, like just droning for like 5 minutes straight. It's terrifying, but I love it.
I think it's hilarious that Loser is the most conventional song.
That is, no, you listen to that album, like it's the most, well, obviously it was a big hit, so you know, it's got a little bit of that. It's accessible is the word, not like conventional, I guess, but as it goes on, it gets less and less accessible. I think it'd be incredibly funny to think about people who bought this when they just heard Loser and they're like, oh, this guy's probably good. And they listen to this album. And they're like, what am I doing here? But I think that's what makes it fun. I literally just today, the reason I wanted to talk about it was I went to the Record Lounge and I found this one. I'd never seen it before. I never knew this was even on vinyl now, because every time I looked it up, it was like $60 for a pressing from like 10, 15 years ago. I just found it today, took it home with me. It's great. One of my very favorite albums. This general vibe is also shared by a lot of Ween albums, which I talk about them a lot, but I didn't want to dive into Ween too badly today.
Still mark it off your bingo card.
Yeah, bingo card, there you go. But it's just this general vibe of like everything being messed up, but like in a good way. Like it's in a way that makes sense. It's in a way that like...
It's perfect.
It's perfect in that like it's purposely, perfectly like imperfect, I guess, messed up. Yeah. The vibe is just wrong, but it's wrong in a correct way. I don't know. It's paradoxical. Listen to this album to, you know, you'll know what I'm talking about. Good stuff. That's what I got right now anyway, though.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, so I guess I'll hop in here for a bit. Perfect album, right? So this grew out of a conversation we had at a meeting. We mentioned that. And some of it was actually inspired by a conversation I'd had with somebody else about perfect songs. And like a couple that we referenced were like Smoke on the Water, where it's like, it's all there. Like it has all of the parts that you expected it to have. It's got a cool riff. It's got cool vocals. It's got a cool story. It's got a cool guitar solo. It's got all of the parts you're expecting. It's got all the parts you're waiting for. And like the big thing for me about what I'm considering when I'm saying something is perfect is I'm not saying it's the best or it's my favorite. Like you touched on that. Mm-hmm. And you even kind of mentioned something like this where it's, I wouldn't change anything.
Right.
And that's like a big thing to me is there's a lot of songs I listen to and I'm like, this is amazing. But you're like, oh, that one bit's kind of whatever, or this other bit sounds funny. And especially when you like bring it up to the album scale, like when you got like 10 songs or more to work with, all of a sudden it's like, one of these is going to be weak. And that doesn't always happen. And that's, you know, really, like we talked about Thriller. That has a bunch of like mega hits, right? But even the songs on there that like you'd never hear on the radio are pretty good.
Baby Be Mine. I love that song.
And that's like, and again, I've heard that on the radio. You know what
Dang
I mean?
It.
It's not that you never do, but like it's very, very rare, you know. When we're expanding this out to perfect album, it's really hard to get like some really solid examples. But I came up with a couple, and I intentionally tried to not just include all of my favorites on this list, but some of my favorites made their way in. And like one of the big ones I wanted to mention was the Cars debut album.
Oh my God.
Yes. Thank you.
So that's one of my all-time favorites. And when I say the debut album, I literally mean the debut album. It's not called The Cars. It's The Cars debut album. That's the name of the album, which is like so hilarious. Love them for doing that. But that's an album where every song is perfect. I love all of them. There's nothing I would change. I wouldn't change the song order on the album. I wouldn't change any part of it. It all sounds great. It's made really well. The writing is amazing. Just like the mix of like high energy rock guitar sound with like super synthy stuff. especially like the switch between the vibe of like, you know, fun, harder rock kind of sounds mixed with like really slow, like moving in stereo.
Oh, it's thank
like
you. Yes, that's barely, my favorite song on that.
Barely a rock song, you know what I mean? But it's so cool. And that's one where like, yeah, I wouldn't change anything and it's perfect in that way. But that one doesn't necessarily have a solid vibe. You know, we were talking about that where like, not, I don't mean that it doesn't have a good vibe. No, I mean that it doesn't have like some consistent message throughout. There's a little bit of that there, but it's mostly just meant to, I think, be a fun rock album. And that's like when we're talking about a consistent vibe beginning to end. I'm going to pull out a newer one that is also one of my favorites, Modest Mouse. It's the Green album.
I think that's the, a good news for people. Something like
yeah, good news for people who love that.
I only know Lonesome Crowded West. That's my bad.
So that album, you know, we were talking about Beck, and that's why made me want to talk about it. Especially is it's got this gritty, nasty feel to it, and like all the songs on there are very well made and very cool. And there's a lot of variety. You know, you're like Float On and stuff is kind of like a chill jam. But yeah, there's still this like gritty feel underneath it, and you can kind of get that sense. Even the slow stuff, like Blame It on the Tetons, like it still has this vibe that matches well with Dance Hall and like Bury Me With It. It meant a lot to me when I was in high school and stuff, so I love it. It's not just that like I wouldn't change anything, but that one has the consistent vibe, which is more akin to like were saying.
But maybe it's not like not so much about the vibe almost. It's just like, did they like what did they want to do when they made the album? And like, did they do it? You know, like that album, like you said, like they set out, it was like a nasty thing they're trying to make. Like I've heard Lonesome Crowded West. I'm not sure how similar that is to this album, but
yeah, it's like, pretty similar,
you know, for that one, they were kind of, I feel like they set out to be like kind of a, like you said, that the title is like exemplar of it. Like, you know, Lonesome Crowded West, you know, it's like a country vibe, that kind of stuff, like nasty, like rock, like almost punk at times, hardcore punk, that kind of stuff. And it all mixes together, and I think, you know, they set out to make an album like that, and they succeeded, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not just the music that's part of it, but it's also, like, you know, the cover and the title and the...
Sure. So I've got another one that I'm going to tell. This is another one of my all-time favorite albums. And this one is not perfect, and I wanted to bring this up for that specific reason. Real Big Fish, Turn the Radio Off, okay? 1996, ska. You guys know I love ska. I'm sorry, I know it's dorky, but I love it.
No judgment here.
So you say that, but no, I'm joking.
In this room.
But yeah, this album is like such a punk ska album. It's so cool. Tons of the songs are awesome. Some of the songs dip into like metal vibes, but as a whole, it's like very ska. It's very horns focused. The bass on it is just amazing. A lot of the like lyrics and stuff are very tied to the music industry and really like kind of communicate something about that. And like it has a consistent vibe. But there's one song on the album that makes it not a perfect album. It's near the end of the album, and it's basically making fun of vegetarians. You can have whatever opinion you want on vegetarianism, but like the song's just weak. It sounds fine. It's just not as cool sounding as the rest of the album. And then the lyrics, the whole album is quite negative in terms of like the attitude it takes. And that's like, again, when they're talking about like, hey, the corrupt music industry, that negative attitude really like vibes well and connects. But this one comes across more like they're making fun of somebody.
Yeah, it's punching down like versus punching
up. In a way. And, you know, again, 90s were a huge time for that sort of like vegetarian, like this was before vegan was even an idea.
Yeah.
But this like animal rights thing was really coming to serious public focus, and yeah, people were really getting annoyed. So I can understand why they wrote it, but like, I don't like that song that much. And I thought it was important to mention, like, this is one of my favorite albums of all time. I would say it's in like top three ska albums, maybe top two ska albums for me, which is insane to say for somebody who likes ska as much as me, but it's really good. There's always something, and that's like, this is something I would change. I would either take this song out, or I would change the vibe slightly, or yeah, I would make it slightly more coming together on the issue, just making fun of somebody.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like an album that's like all the way through, it's just great, and then at the very end, they just throw something on there, and you're like, okay, why'd you have to do that?
This is like, I think, the second to last or third to last song.
There's a if you don't mind, I have like one album just immediately came to my mind. This Rubber Soul by the Beatles. Great album all the way through, folk rock, wonderful stuff. Until you get to the very end and they throw the song Run for Your Life on there, and it's about wanting to like kill your girlfriend if she cheats on you. And it's like, John Lennon, don't put that. No, it's weird. It's a vibe shift because the whole album is very good, and then that's just tacked on at the very end. You can like skip it and you won't miss anything. But it's what keeps it from being like a perfect album to me. Like it's just you threw that. You had to get that in there at the last minute. I was having such a good time. Thank you, John Lennon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I got another one to talk about, and this is going to kind of build off of something you said, and you said it too, Andy, you said this too, where it does everything that it like set out to do. Mm-hmm. So get your bingo cards out. I'm going to mention it. Weezer Blue Album.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry. This is one of my top albums. Well, again, I didn't mean to bring in favorites, but all I've got are favorites now.
I was thinking
about
that.
Weezer Blue. Again, it's an album I wouldn't change anything. Start to finish, it's perfect. Like there's nothing that I go, oh, I don't like this part, or oh, this is kind of a weird vibe. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that none of the songs aren't a weird vibe.
It's Weezer.
But I think they're intended to be.
Yeah.
And that's where I wanted to go, is that it accomplishes what it set out to. So famously with the Blue Album, Rivers Cuomo wanted, like, this is going to be a rock album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious that it's, like, famous as being nerd rock now, because he thought, like, oh, I nailed it. This is such a good rock
album.
Yeah,
you know what he said? It was like he said he wanted to make the next Nevermind. Like, that's what was in his head when he was making this. Oh, he's like, this is going to be Nirvana. And then he saw the reviews that were like, this is great nerd music. You're like, it's not, they're making fun of themselves. It's funny. And he's just like, oh no, what have I done?
Oh, brutal. This one, so he is part of making it a, like a great rock album. He's like, all right, we're not going to do all this like corny guitar stuff that I've been hearing a lot recently. There is no reverb on the entire album. And it's like all heavily distorted guitars, you know, except for the slower songs.
Right.
But like a big part of what they were trying to do was like, really define this high energy rock sound, and it would really become like the Weezer sound. And
yeah.
Like, yeah, we can talk about it as nerdy or whatever, but like it's a hard rocking album.
It is.
And like some of those guitar parts, you're just like, dude. Okay, maybe not. No. I'm sorry. I dislike the memification of Weezer, but
only in dreams. I'll say that. That one's that's so good.
That's a
heavy,
heavy
riff at the end. Yeah. Also, I just realized there's a connection. You mentioned earlier the Cars. You know, Rick Ocasek from the Cars. He's the one who produced the Blue Album.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah. No, that's the connection there.
That's awesome.
And you can kind of hear like you know the early power pop stuff. They were definitely drawing a lot from that when they made the Blue Album. So you know, it's just a perfect little segue, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know if should I throw in some honorable mentions?
Yeah,
we ain't got time. Face the Music, ELO. I was gonna be talking about
ELO.
That one. Nevermind was actually something that I mentioned.
Oh.
Dookie by Green Day. Again, these are all just albums I love, but like wouldn't change anything. But anyway, I think
valid. That's
pretty much all the time we got.
No, yeah, that was very enlightening. I think it's a fun thought experiment. I encourage you at home to like think about, you know, what makes an album perfect to you.
And we might come back to this.
Oh, definitely. We'll do something like this again. I think it's a fun time just listing off albums we like. I'll admit that. That's just a fun thing to do. Great concept. Think about it yourselves. Listen to all of the stuff we mentioned if you want. That's okay if you don't. We'd like it if you did. Thank you all for tuning in. We hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.